As we continue to navigate these unprecedented times, KCBS is trying to track down answers to your questions about the coronavirus pandemic. And each weekday morning at 9:20, we've been doing an Ask an Expert segment, each day trying to focus on a different piece of the big picture. Today, we're diving back into the face mask question, the debate around them, the research surrounding them, what works, what doesn't, how can they or do they slow the spread of cases. To answer your questions, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Jeremy Howard, data scientist and researcher in residence at the University of San Francisco. Jeremy, thanks for joining us again. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. We did this about 10 days ago, and one would think everything would have settled down, the questions would have been resolved, and we'd have moved on, but that certainly is not what has happened here. What's your experience over these last few weeks as you've been pushing a message regarding masks?
Well, it's been interesting to see what's been happening. As I was concerned would happen, things in the southern states of the U.S., particularly Texas and Arizona, are looking really scary. They opened up in an unsafe way. They didn't require masks in those states. They opened up places where there's a lot of talking and socializing, like bars. And so we've been seeing a really concerning rise in cases and hospital capacity now being reached in Houston, for example. And so what we're now seeing is people perhaps, well, definitely far too late, more and more states are now finally requiring masks. And we're now at the point where about two-thirds of the U.S. population lives in regions that have mask requirements. So masks are, you know, kind of an old thing for some parts of the country. We have them for a month or two now. And some parts of the country, it's something they're just getting the hang of again.
Okay, so will you walk us through the data you've been able to gather? And this is, of course, a real-time experiment, as we're all learning in many ways, as to the efficacy of masks. And we're not talking necessarily about some high-grade, medical-grade mask. We're talking about a plain old piece of cloth.
Right. So the best way, I think, to look at that is to look at the difference between regions that have masks and use them, require them, and time periods that do versus those that don't. There's been three really great papers on this. One of them looks at 193 countries around the world, and it found that in countries that have widespread mask usage or mask requirements have a 10 times lower transmission rate than countries that don't have widespread mask usage or requirement. We've seen a similar thing in a study of U.S. states. U.S. states that have a mask requirement have dramatically lower transmission rates. And a paper that just came out from Goldman Sachs yesterday found that based on these studies, they estimate if the remaining states add a mask requirement now, it will save the U.S. economy about $1 trillion.
Is there any way to know in these places that have mask requirements what the level of compliance is?
It's not easy to know, but you can make a pretty good guess. And the way that compliance is tested is through two things. One, through surveys, which is asking people, and another is through just observing folks on the street. And it appears that in the U.S., in states that have a mask requirement, mask compliance is about 30% higher than in places that don't have a requirement. And so the difference between, say, 40% compliance and 70% compliance could be the difference between the virus spreading dramatically quickly versus it being largely controlled.
There remains confusion because people heard early on and are still hearing that some masks protect you, some masks don't, that there's no absolute protection. So what is the truth about the protective value of a mask, both in terms of emitting virus and of ingesting it?
Yeah, it is confusing. It's particularly confusing because the healthcare authorities lied to us in the early days of the pandemic and told us that masks definitely don't work in order to try to protect supplies to healthcare workers. And so when the healthcare authorities don't tell us the truth, obviously we're going to get pretty distrustful when they try to change it later. The truth is that nearly any kind of face covering does a great job of protecting others from you. And about half of people who get infected from people who don't even know they're sick. So that's really important. On the other hand, the ability of a mask to protect you from others varies a lot depending on the material that's used and the fit. So definitely a mask is better than no mask because it could stop you from potentially killing somebody without even knowing it. But to keep yourself safe as well, you want to be careful to get the best kind of mask you can.
Okay, let's get to the questions then and remind people that if one pops into mind during the interview, go ahead and send it to us by email at askus@kcbsradio.com. Let's go here. Okay, the first one. Since many are still not wearing masks, I think it's time for us mask wearers to be more proactive to protect ourselves. Is there something we can do to make our masks not only protect others from us, but also protect us from others?
Yeah, there is. And we've got an increasing amount of scientific research around this now. The two things we'll look at is material and fit. So on the material of your mask, it's good to have two layers of a tight weave cotton, so say 600 threads per inch, such as you might find in a high quality bed sheet. And then between those two layers of cotton, leave room for a pocket where you can insert a piece of paper towel. See, paper towel is an amazing material because it doesn't have the same kind of regular weave that most fabrics do. And therefore, there aren't holes for droplets or particles to get through. It actually looks very similar under an electron microscope to what surgical mask material looks like. So for material, either a combination of cotton and paper towel, and obviously the paper towel you would remove after each trip outside and replace with a new piece of paper towel. That's what I do. Another good one is a combination of two layers of cotton and one layer of chiffon, or two layers of cotton and one layer of silk. It actually turns out that having two different materials works a lot better than just one material because it's able to filter more different types of particle. So that's the material. And then for fit, you want a good tight fit around the nose. And the best way to do that is to get a mask where there's room to insert, if it doesn't already have one, something like a paper clip or a pipe cleaner, or a tightly rolled little piece of aluminum foil. And that gives you a moldable nose piece that you can kind of mold to the contours of your nose and get rid of those gaps. And then the second thing is to avoid the gap under the chin. So make sure the mask goes all the way around the bottom of the chin. And then avoid the gaps on the sides of the mask by getting one that ties all the way around the head rather than one with just ear loops.
Okay, well, that gives a pretty good landscape of architecture for the right kind of mask, and that actually deals with a couple of the other questions we had. Let's go on to the next one. I see people using the same mask going on for months now. They have to be filling up with bacteria, don't they? Isn't this a problem?
No more than your socks or your T-shirt or your underpants. These are all pieces of clothing which touch your skin, and therefore you should wash them regularly in soap. And soap actually destroys the lipid layer that protects the virus and destroys the virus. So as long as you wash your mask just as carefully as you wash any other pieces of clothing that are in direct contact with your skin, then you should be good to go.
Next question. How can it be safe to wear a mask when they reduce the amount of oxygen getting to the lungs and concentrate carbon dioxide right where you breathe?
Sure. So when you breathe, you're breathing about a pint of air or about half a liter of air on each breath. Where's that air coming from? Well, it's not largely coming from the area between your mouth and the mask, where, as you say, oxygen is lower and carbon dioxide is higher, because there's not much room for air there. There certainly isn't room for a pint of air. There's room for, a few milliliters. So I've actually done some experiments, and I found that in practice, wearing a mask, the vast, vast majority of the air you breathe in is not coming from inside the mask, but is coming from the air around the mask, just like you would normally breathe. And in practice, the amount of oxygen you breathe in is only reduced by about 0.1%, which is not at all significant from a health point of view.
Okay. And how about the carbon dioxide? Because this is one that's continually popping up everywhere you go on social media. You see this concern.
Yeah, it's the same thing. So that 0.1% of oxygen decrease gets replaced with carbon dioxide largely instead. So there's a tiny, tiny difference in the amount of carbon dioxide and oxygen in practice. And again, the reason is because when you're breathing in nearly all of the air that you breathe, when you actually do an experiment, you'll find that it comes from the area that is outside of the mask, because there's very, very little room for retained atmosphere inside the mask. There's just no space really between the mask and your mouth to actually hold much gas.
Okay. I have an N95 mask which has a small black vent on one side and then a filter inserted on the inside of the mask, changed every month per manufacturer's regulations. I wear this mask whenever I'm outdoors, also inside any building, stores, etc. Two stores only, Trader Joe's and Costco, when they saw my mask, immediately handed me a circular piece of scotch tape to put over the outside ventilation circle that's about the size of a quarter. The person at the store said it was a state law that this small ventilation circle had to be covered. Why is this? Does this cover up the outside vent of my mask, compromise it?
So the reason for that law, I think it's a local law, not a state law, but same thing in the Bay Area. The reason for the law is that most of those valves allow largely unfiltered exhalation, so they're not protecting others from you in case you're sick. Some of them do have a filter on the inside, but that's pretty rare. So when people see that valve, they immediately will get concerned and they will ask you to cover it up. Covering up that valve certainly does not make the mask less effective. It actually makes it more effective. The reason for that valve is to make it a little easier for you to exhale, it's easier for you to breathe. So it's a comfort thing, but it actually makes it a bit less effective.
Okay. Next question. I transport medical personnel as a bus driver. When the pandemic began, I pulled out a high-quality ski mask I had and have used it ever since. Three layers. Inner is steamed fleece. Center is silk. Outer is cotton. I cannot see light through it. Is this an effective solution?
Yeah, it sounds great. As we talked about earlier, that combination of materials, they're great materials, and you've got different materials there, so that's good. So the only question is the fit. As long as there's no big gaps around your nose or the side of your face, that sounds like a great idea.
Okay, next one. If a mask prevents outgoing virus, we keep hearing we should wear one to protect others. Why doesn't it prevent incoming virus?
Well, as we just talked about, it does. The challenge is that it's harder to protect incoming virus. The reason it's harder is that when we speak, the droplets that come out, which are the main way that this virus is transmitted, we believe, amongst people without symptoms, those droplets rapidly evaporate. After they evaporate, they're very small and they're very hard to filter. So it's much easier to stop the virus at the source. So in other words, to protect others from an infected person by having everybody wear a mask. The ability of a mask to filter out the smaller evaporated nuclei is because it's much harder. It means you need to have a more precise type of material and a much better fit. So that's really the difference between the two sides.
Okay.
So it helps in either place, but it's much easier in the outgoing direction.
All right. Next question says, I have a construction mask. It's a Trend Air Stealth half respirator mask. It is a NIOSH N100 labeled. I can't find any info on the box or website about virus or bacteria filtration. Is this better than an N95 mask?
Yeah, it is. So and the N versus P simply refers to whether it handles oil in the matter or not. So that obviously doesn't affect COVID-19. And the 95 versus 100 is whether it protects filters 95% or 100% of particles. So, yeah, N100 will filter more particles than an N95.
Okay. I'm confused about the social bubble. When we get together, we thought that meant we could do bring your own drink, but it's difficult to wear a mask while having a drink or a snack. Are we allowed to unmask sitting 6 feet away during bubble time, or is there a mask that works when we want to eat or drink together?
Yeah, so this is a complicated one, and I've talked to lots of friends and family about this. They're obviously very keen to spend time with friends and family. But drinking and eating is, you know, it's just an unsafe thing to do because you can't do it while wearing a mask. So the most important thing I'd say is if you're going to do it outside, because outside you do not get a build-up of the droplets and therefore you don't get that same viral load. As long as there's at least some breeze, they'll gradually be blown away. The second is distancing. Indoors, 6 feet is not enough to remain safe, particularly when you're wearing not wearing a mask. So if you're going to be indoors, try to be further than 6 feet if you can. And, you know, the best you can do if you're going to be, well, try not to eat and drink would be the best. Just have a chat without the food and drink, even though that's what we're used to. And if you really do need to eat and drink, take the mask off, have a couple of mouthfuls and put it back on again to minimize the number of times that you're breathing or speaking without the mask. And particularly when you do take the mask off to eat or drink, don't talk. Don't talk until you put it back on again, because talking creates 10 times more droplets than breathing.
Next question. At my workplace, not everyone is 6 feet away. Not all are wearing face masks. I wear a KN95 mask. Am I as protected as I would be if wearing an N95? What's the difference between the N95 and KN95?
There's not much difference. They're just different standards in different countries. N95 is the American standard. And in fact, in the U.S. at the moment, the FDA does allow KN95s instead of N95s in certain situations due to the mask shortage. KN95s often wrap kind of around the ears rather than around the back of the head. Some people find that more comfortable. Some people find it less. If you are less than 6 feet away from people indoors for an extended period of time, that is a dangerous situation, and as well as wearing a mask, I would strongly advise wearing goggles as well, because this virus can also come in through the eyes.
Okay, and let's speak of that. They actually got a couple of questions coming on that here. Which option protects the eyes better, face masks or face shields?
Well, face masks obviously don't protect the eyes at all. Face shields provide some protection to the eyes, but not as much as more tightly fitting goggles. The best thing to do actually is to combine face shields and a mask together.
Next question. There's a lot of information on asthmatics and a lot of assumptions made about people's ability to shelter in place. I have emphysema, not severe enough to need oxygen. I must go out at times for essential business. I must use public transportation. I may be medically exempt from wearing a mask, but I wouldn't leave home without one. I hear virtually nothing about what's best for people with COPD, emphysema, and similar lung diseases. What do you recommend?
Well, this is tough. I mean, So in that situation, you know, those comorbidities, you are at higher risk of higher level of symptoms or even death if you do get COVID-19. So you certainly want to protect yourself outside. On the other hand, the best way to protect yourself is with a, you know, N95 respirator or better, which A, are not widely available, and B, are much harder to breathe through than a cloth mask. So I'd say the best thing you can do is to wear the highest quality mask you comfortably and safely can, and combine that with a face shield. Keep your distance when you do have to go out as best as you can. But yeah, it's a really rough place to be in.
Next question. How good at protecting our disposable KN95 masks when they get wet due to transpiration and sweat? How long can they be reused and still be effective?
We don't have great answers to the first question. In the absence of evidence, you might want to be cautious about trying not to let them get too wet. On the latter question, it seems that they can be reused quite a number of times, as long as after use you put them in a 160 Fahrenheit oven for at least half an hour, or in some way warm them up. Maybe you've got a dryer or something you could use. So they just need to be kept at that warm level. Not any hotter than that, though, because it can damage the mask. They are harder to clean than just a cloth mask, though, which is one of the reasons that you might want to avoid them if you can.
On a standard surgical mask, where does one place the wire type side, over the nose or under? Does it matter which side we place in or out, the white side or the blue or yellow colored side?
That moldable piece goes over the top of the nose, and then you mold it to your nose, and then you want the soft absorbent side to be closest to your face, so that it's actually absorbing the the droplets.
Okay. Next question. Does a layer of cotton batting or non-fusible, non-iron-on interfacing increase protection?
Yeah, there are certain things that can increase protection. Any kind of electrostatically charged material can help because it can help protect from smaller particles, such as the evaporated nuclei we mentioned. So yes, those are potentially useful for helping to protect you.
Okay. Next question. The thin disposable paper masks so common around look somewhat flimsy. Do they do a good job of protecting the wearer as well as others?
They do an okay job. The big problem is with the fit. We talked about how they have multiple nose pieces. If you use that effectively, then that can help. But they do tend to leave a gap around the outside of the face. You can close that gap by stringing three rubber bands together, and you can find information on how to do this on the internet and using that to kind of create a tight seal all the way around your mouth. But yeah, overall, those surgical masks are not that great at protecting the wearer.
Okay, I've got a couple more quick one here. I have five cotton print masks. They don't fit tightly around the nose. What can I buy to add structure, and will I need to know how to sew?
Sure. So you don't really need to know how to sew. I would use one of three things. The easiest thing is to get some aluminum foil, cut out a rectangular piece that's wide enough to go over your nose and the top of your cheekbones, and then fold or roll it up until it's kind of moldable and firm. And then you can attach that to the top of the mask. You can either kind of try to just cut a little hole and thread it in, or you can tape it, or you can staple it. You only need to sew. My mother-in-law was kind enough to actually create a little strip along the top with her sewing machine for me. So maybe you can find somebody to help you like I did.
There's usually one good thing about people who sew, they're usually ready to help. Okay, let me get to the last one. And this question said, I heard you speak last time on Ask an Expert, that say that officials lied to us about the effectiveness of masks to protect the supply. I've looked this up. I can't readily find it. Where can I find this information so I can point to proof when in conversation? Let's do this. If you can send us a link or something, we'll add it into the transcript on today's episode. Does that work?
Absolutely.
Okay, good deal. Well, that's what we'll do, and I suspect strongly, Jeremy, this won't be the last time we talk.
Okay.
Thanks so much. Have yourself a
good... All right, you're welcome.
All right. That's Jeremy Howard. He is from University of San Francisco, a data scientist and researcher in residence, and to that last question, we'll make sure that whatever information Jeremy sends us, we will add to the text transcript of the episode, which will be posted in a couple of hours. It takes a little time to get the audio uploaded and run it through the text transcription engine. And that'll be that. Tomorrow morning, by the way, it's going to be a special episode with Larry Bear, the CEO of the San Francisco Giants, answering questions about how baseball plans to come back.